And welcome to The Dividing Line. It is 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon here in the Mountain West. Well, this is actually the desert southwest. We have mountains, but anyways, that's what time it is, and it's always that time. Those of you who get confused about what time the program is on, stop playing with your clocks. That is your only problem whatsoever, is that you play with those clocks that one weekend in the spring and one weekend in the fall. If you didn't do that, hey, all of us would be on the same page all the time. And I don't know why all the rest of you do that. We tried that here once, but I think I've already told you it was really silly to have it like 107 degrees at 10 o'clock at night during July, which is just, you know, a bad thing. Anyhow, hey, I'm always bad about updating the calendar on the website. And that's really bad because a lot of folks really depend on that. Every time I go someplace, we were in Dallas a couple weeks ago, and Countryside Bible, and we had folks who showed up because they saw it on the website. And we should do a better job in keeping track of things like that. So let you know right now what's coming up this coming weekend. Yes, right after Thanksgiving. In fact, I need to find out when I leave. I need to go through the old emails here, find out when I'm supposed to be at the airport, try to remember to bring my driver's license this time. Oh, man, that was a story. Anyways, we're going to St. Louis. Actually, it's St. Charles, Missouri, for those of you who are picky about things like that. But I suppose when people come to Phoenix, if they're speaking in Glendale, they say they're going to Phoenix. So, you know, whatever, however that works. Flying over there, and I think this will be the third time that I have been at Covenant of Grace Church in St. Charles. I will be there the 29th through December 1st. Friday night, 7 o'clock, Introduction to the Trinity. On Saturday, we're going to be having three sessions. That's going to keep you all going. 10 a.m. on monotheism, 2 p.m. on the existence of the three persons in the Trinity, 7 p.m. the quality of the three persons in the Trinity. There are breaks between these, I want you to know, right now. And then Sunday morning in the Bible study, questions and answers, and at 11 o'clock I will be preaching in the service. This will be the third time I've been there. We did a seminar on the doctrines of grace a couple of years ago. I got to speak there in April of last year. I believe it was April of last year. But just briefly in the morning, because I was speaking at a conference there in the same area, and they were kind enough to have me there. Van Lees and all the folks there, wonderful folks, really enjoy being with them. And for information, they are at 2320 Old Highway 94 South, wherever in the world that is, St. Charles, Missouri, 63303. And if you want to get hold of them, 636-447-5691 is the number. And they're at www.covenantofgracechurch.org for those of you who would like to look at that and check out the information there. The whole thing for the seminar is online there if you'd like to see that. And then I think I'm actually home for a while, amazingly enough. And I get to be here through the holidays, and then starting in the middle of January, we head back to Long Island. I do not have my schedule as yet concerning where I'm going to be. Obviously, I'm going to be doing the, or I'm scheduled anyways, to do the youth retreat for Hope Reformed Baptist Church, and that normally means I preach Sunday night, the last Sunday night of February there at Hope Reformed Baptist Church. But where I'll be before that is currently up in the air. I may be up in Connecticut. At Steve Eggie's church. Haven't worked all that out yet, but that's something I'm hoping to get to do. Did that a couple years ago. Actually, I think it was in, it must have been in January, because I remember there was snow, and that means had to have been January. Couldn't have been during May or July. Well, I suppose you do have snow in Connecticut once in a while in May, but that'd be fairly rare. But anyways, that's coming up in January. The first weekend in February, I'm going to be in Omaha with at Pat Obendroff's church. And no, I do not have a URL. I suppose I could look through my personal stuff here and probably track it down eventually. But we're going to be up there for I think it's just a Saturday-Sunday men's Bible study. I guess they have folks come from all over the place. And we're going to be doing that, and I'm looking forward to that opportunity. I haven't had a chance to meet Pat Obendroff, but I met his brother in the church, Bethlehem Bible Church in well, it's not Boston. Why is the name West Broylston? There you go, West Broylston, Massachusetts. yes, that's the Great Republic. The Republic of Massachusetts, yes, where we have ways of dealing with you. But anyways, and then the third week of February, I'm looking at the... I need to start making this calendar on my desktop a little bit bigger. Actually, it's looking good today. This should be the 20th through the 23rd of February, going to be in San Antonio, Texas. And we're going to do a full seminar on Norman Geisler's Chosen But Free. Yes, indeed. I think we'll probably have a few copies of The Potter's Freedom there. But put together a PowerPoint presentation and handle all the questions. And something tells me that probably going to be talking a little bit about maybe another book. What Love Is This as well, because I've said many times, so What Love Is This makes Chosen But Free look like a scholarly tome, but still, there are a lot of crossover. What was the date of San Antonio again? Well, let me repeat that, because MDH is in the channel, and those people who are in the channel have a special relationship to this program. Yes, indeed. That's going to be February 20th through the 23rd. Thank you very much for asking. I feel like Ask Jeeves on... This is actually a computer-generated voice. I just sit here and watch the channel and respond to what's said. Yes, that's sort of how it works. But anyways, we're going to be doing a seminar down there in February, and I'm not sure about what happens after that. Obviously, when is Easter? Can someone, this is the other nice thing. I answer you all on the channel. Now you all answer me. When's Easter? I need to know the date of Easter, because that will tell me the, I didn't open up my little window here for Mr. A.O. Min, so I can talk to him and he can talk to me. Need to know the date of Easter so we'll know when. We're going to try, notice the word try, to have our outreach at the Easter pageant of the Mormon Church in Mesa. Notice I said try. I said try because we have been told that the same wonderful Christian in-depth theologians that were in Salt Lake City running around spring... The Easter is in spring. The spring. Thank you very much. That's the date you're giving me. Thank you very much. April 20th? I better not question the person who told me this, because she could kick me. April 20th. Wow. Late one this year. Those are the hot ones, because, I mean, man, it can be well over 100 in that time of year around here. All right. April 20th. I got it now. That's the 15th posting of the date now. Yeah, that's spring. I do realize that is spring. That means it's going to be a good bit after the general conference of the church in Salt Lake. And we're just, I find myself sitting around... When I am not dealing with my, when I'm not sitting there staring at the beautiful 320 by 320 TFT full color screen on my Palm Pilot tungsten tee, I'm sorry. I'm wondering what in the world are we going to do in Salt Lake City? We mentioned we came back last time that again these people had acted like. I don't know how to even explain their behavior. I did see on the Shields website. Shields is a LDS website. There is an article with pictures of the King James only folks, and you know the one thing that obviously. Struck me, and I said this over and over again, but here's documented proof. You want to go to the Shields website and take a look at this yourself. Now, these folks know there is a difference. between ourselves and these other people. There's no question the people who are involved with Shields well know that we do not act like the King James only people, so on and so forth. But does it matter? No, because if you read the captions, while they do have a picture of one of the signs they had about me and that kind of stuff, there's still, we're all just anti-Mormons. We're all in the same, thrown in the same bucket, and it doesn't matter whether you act like a complete and total goon like these people do, or whether you actually have serious things to say. It does not matter whatsoever. They are going to behave in a particular way. It's truly a shame to see that kind of thing, but that's the way it is. That's exactly why these people are doing what they're doing, and that's exactly what I've tried to explain to them in the past. They don't care. These people could care less about evangelism or the glory of God or the truth of God or anything like it. I'm not talking about the Shields people. I'm talking about the King James only wackoids that are up there. But anyways, don't know what we're going to do in Salt Lake. I mean, we just may have to totally change how we do things. It may end up just being something where we really pour our energies into arranging these debates more than we have in the past. Maybe work even more with the individuals up there in Salt Lake City to make that the main thing we do. I don't know. I just don't know. It's a difficult thing to face. But certainly, if those individuals show up in Mesa, the outreach out there is going to be it's going to be over with, because the Mesa PD, the Mesa Police Department, is not going to put up with their kind of behavior. There is absolutely, positively, no question about that. And it's if they show up and start behaving the way they behave, and they don't know any other way to behave. That's just it. They have no self-control. They start behaving like that, and they are out of there. All of us. And they will not differentiate between us who have been there for, this will be our 19th year, actually, if you include the one time I went out there with my lovely wife in the back of a Kawasaki 440, while we were newlyweds, this would be the 20th year, actually 21st, because it was 1983, and this would be 2003, so it'd be, you know, anyways, we've been out there a long time. They're not going to care. That's going to be absolutely irrelevant to them, and things will just fall apart, and it'll be all over with, and there will be no outreach, and I've said many times, these King James only folks are the Mormons' greatest allies that they've ever had. And so I don't know what's going to happen there, but that's what's coming up in the spring. And I hold in my hand, and by the way, if you'd like to comment on anything I've said or have a question, I'm not really sure exactly where I'm going today. I have a number of different little things to talk about here. The number is 877-753-3341, 877-753-3341 is the phone number. And when I came into the office this afternoon, I found the newest edition of the Christian Research Journal. This is the, let's see, volume 25, number 1, 2002. I guess they don't put a... Yeah, it's just numbered now. It's not really, you know, spring, summer, fall, anything like that. It's just what volume it is and what number it is and so on and so forth. And the current edition of the CRI Journal has a feature-length article entitled Dangerous Airwaves, Harold Camping's Call to Flee the Church. Of course, that's the name of my book on Harold Camping. And interestingly enough, and they really could have gone a long way with this if they wanted to, there are no caricatures of Harold Camping. Harold Camping would be a person who is very, very much, very, very much liable to those caricatures that they've used for people like, T.D. Jakes and people like that. But didn't go that direction. Nice looking article, and wow, the synopsis takes up an entire blue page, page 23. It's just the blue page. It's a very pretty blue, but it's the blue page Harold Camping is the president of Family Radio. He teaches that God has done away with the church, and thus there should be no more local congregations, elders, deacons, and ordinances such as baptism or the Lord's Supper. He maintains the Holy Spirit has left the church as an empty shell with no power to proclaim the gospel. Because Camping calls his followers to flee the church and form fellowships around his teachings, Christians must understand what the Bible teaches about the church and what the proper means of biblical interpretation are in order to counter Camping's false teachings. Whenever you write one of these articles, you get to write one of those little... a synopsis, and that's included there. So the current edition of the CRI Journal, if you haven't read Dangerous Airwaves yet, read it anyways. Do not use that as an excuse not to read the book, because these feature articles are only about, between 45 and 4,800 words. And that's not really a whole lot, and the book was significantly longer than that and goes into more detail. So take a look at that, and if you do get the CRI Journal, then you were already aware of that, or you will become aware of that as it arrives. I've never quite figured out how things are shipped, to be perfectly honest with you, because sometimes people will be asking me about something they've seen, and I haven't gotten mine yet, or I'll get mine before the others, and you know, whatever. So take a look at that. That is available right now. 877-753-3341. I've been sort of watching a little bit of the discussion here in the chat channel, and so far there's absolutely positively nothing of nothing of interest other than someone asking if a Kawasaki 440 is a VCR. That was deep. That was real real deep. And then oh, good. We don't have to worry about the stuff of the pageant, because the Amphibo is going to bring up the Cajun Mafia to handle the pageant, which I think the only thing they're known for is feeding people really hot food. And as a result, they do whatever you tell them to do. And if you have questions or comments, 877-753-3341. It was interesting. Someone had posted the URL to... what is it? Shields. Let me see here. This is when I go when I'm scrolling back. There it is. www.shields-research.org is the URL for website that I mentioned before. And I was looking through there. I'd actually saved a couple articles. We really need to change the main page article, and I'm a bad person and not getting those things done. I've been working, for those of you who are keeping track of these things, yes, the second round, for me anyways, of the Dave Hunt debate book is completed. For those of you who are just tuning in, I'm writing a book, the title of which is yet unknown. I don't want to say writing it with Dave Hunt, because that would... You know, I've written books with Kevin Johnson, with Jeff Neal, so on and so forth. And that meant we cooperated together, and that's not what we're doing here. Instead, it is more of a, it is a debate book, and there are little, I guess we could describe them as rounds in the writing. That is, each of us wrote 7 presentations, 3,000 words, presenting our position. And then we exchanged them. I finally got all of his just a few weeks ago. And then we write 7 responses of 2,000 words each, and then we exchange them. And then we write 1,000-word responses to that and exchange them. And then 500-word responses to that. And I'm not sure if we exchange them or not. But anyways, so there's a total of 14 chapters with give and take in each one. And... last week I mentioned that I was, in the 6th, on the 6th of the 7th. Finished those up just a couple days ago, unfortunately. It took me a little while. The last one was hard. It's on, well, part of Dave's presentation was on eternal security and his problems with the Reformed perspective on that. Unfortunately, and this is what I think is a drawback throughout the book, is that Dave just assumes that his tradition is orthodoxy, and as a result, doesn't bother to defend it. He, for example, is, and this is in What Love Is This, and not telling you anything about a book that hasn't been published yet. You can read his chapter in this, in his book, What Love Is This? And his whole thesis is, well, I don't believe in what Calvinists believe in. I just believe that because you believe, you're eternally secure. I don't have to worry about whether I'm one of the elect or not. What? That doesn't answer anything. I mean, that doesn't accomplish anything. What about false faith? Well, he doesn't seem to address that. It's almost like there can't be such a thing as false faith. So I found the seventh one very difficult because only about 60% of the presentation was on that subject. Then everything else was on totally different subjects. Compatibilism and limited atonement. It's just, you know, all over the road. And it's extremely difficult to you know, deal with a response like that. Even when you focus in upon one element of it, you sort of feel like, I would like to have commented on this, and I would like to have commented on that, and there's just not enough space in the world, even if I had more words than he had, to point out all of the constant misrepresentations of Reformed theology. In fact, I want to bring this up. One of the regular folks in our chat channel utilizes a tagline from Charles Haddon Spurgeon. And he uses, for those of you who, well, if you're listening to this, you've got to be a geek. I mean, he's got to know what a tagline is. I keep saying, well, if you don't know what a tagline is, then, you know, in the Internet, you'll frequently write things. And I realize, wait a minute, if you're listening to this, you're already on the Internet. You already know that stuff. Anyways, he uses this as part of this, the tagline. And I tracked it down, the writings of Spurgeon, because it just, it demonstrates that, and I did actually make a joke about this, but I shouldn't, that Charles Haddon Spurgeon did know Dave Hunt. or at least he knew someone like him, because this is what Spurgeon wrote. This is from 1861. And now, having made these remarks upon terms used, we must observe that there is nothing upon which men need to be more instructed than upon the question of what Calvinism really is. The most infamous allegations have been brought against us, and sometimes I must fear by men who knew them to be utterly untrue. And to this day, there are many of our opponents who, when they run short of matter, invent and make for themselves a man of straw, call that John Calvin, and then shoot all their arrows at it. We are not come here to defend your man of straw. Shoot at it, or burn it as you will, and, if it suits your convenience, still oppose doctrines which were never taught, and rail at fictions which, save in your own brain, were never in existence. We come here to state what our views really are, and we trust that any who do not agree with us will do us the justice of not misrepresenting us. If they can disprove our doctrines, let them state them fairly and then overthrow them. But why should they first caricature our opinions and then afterwards attempt to put them down? And that quote is going to end up in a future section of this book that we're writing, I assure you, because it just demonstrates that there's nothing new under the sun, and what we're experiencing today in what we see in Norman Geisler and in Dave Hunt and in Bryson and David Cloud, all these individuals who for some reason have felt that they need to set us all straight, warn the world about the terrible, horrible errors of Calvinism. But who, and in general, are the last people on the planet who would ever debate the subject openly. They only want to do that without any ability of anyone else's part to respond to them and to correct them. But seemingly they recognize that there is headway being made, and they are hearing more and more about the doctrines of grace, and therefore they have decided to come after us with pitchforks. Well, it seemingly is nothing new. Every time the truth makes headway, you're going to have that kind of thing taking place, unfortunately. So that's just sort of how the way it is. That's the way it goes. Now, I was talking, before I talked about Spurgeon, I was talking about something else. Where are the pictures on shields? What link do I click on? Look for the thing about protesters at the general conference. It was on the main page. I found it rather easily. Anyways, I also found an article on there that really, and maybe this is where I was going to go, and I'm not sure how I was going to get there from what I was talking about, but one thing that struck me as I was looking at the Shields website, someone just posted the URL again. I guess I could probably give you the specific URL in the process, probably knock us right off the air for trying to bring the thing up. Let me see here. Oop. Boy, that looks completely different than it did yesterday. Was I looking at something else? That does not at all look like what I was looking at yesterday. That's weird. What in the world? That is very, very, very strange. Because I brought up something that had, Well, anyways, that's interesting. Someone's asking for where the article is, and then I bring up that website, and that does not look anything at all like what I was looking at yesterday. I mean, talk about a completely different looking... Man, that is weird. Well, I saved an article off of this. Well, let's see if I can find the article. Maybe that would have Salvation by Grace Alone. That sounds like it. Yep, that's Salvation by Grace Alone. Yeah. Well, it says, oh, this is the FAIR website, F-A-I-R. Sorry. Many apologies. I thought they had coalesced with Shields. Error. Unlike Rush Limbaugh, I do make errors, and I'm not sure if there's a connection here straight over to FAIR, but I think it's FAIR, FAIR-LDS.org, I think, is where this came from. My apologies. That's where I found it, and that's where the pictures of the thingamabobby are. So that'll give you an idea of... see, the problem is it's not in my history file because it was put in the channel, and I just double-clicked on it, and poof, it came up. But it does bring me back to the point I was going to be talking about. I downloaded an article called Salvation by Grace Alone? By John Tvetnis. Now, this fellow is sort of known as an LDS scholar. He's certainly involved with LDS apologetics at the highest levels. And I was reading through it. I find it interesting. Thank you. Everybody's now posting the URL in the channel. I find it interesting that, and I've made this observation in the past, but possibly not on the program. Then again, given how long we've been doing the program by now, I've probably made the observation many times, and all of you are fully well aware of it. But one of the things that strikes me in looking at what is being published in Mormonism is the continued lack of any serious biblical exegetical work. I mean, why aren't there multiple commentaries on Romans or Galatians, exegetical level commentaries? It's because Mormonism cannot do exegesis. It simply is not capable of encountering the text in a meaningful fashion. Not that it's people can't learn Greek and Hebrew. Of course they can, but it's almost worthless to them. It's like if I learned Swahili, I'm not going anywhere where that's going to be useful to me. And once you have the fundamental perspectives of the Mormon Church in regards to Scripture and the doctrine of God that they have, doing exegesis of Romans is sort of irrelevant. There's one little paperback thing on Romans 1 that I've tracked down, and that to be perfectly honest with you, is extremely disappointing and is not exegetically meaningful. And this article, which we'll continue with after the break, just simply continues that. And we would appreciate your phone calls at 877-753-3341. We'll be right back. Try to save your soul from death. It's all works righteousness, you know. Can I manufacture grace for self-denial in some religious place? By weeping hard on your face and saying prayers to some dead saint, you know. Hey, you're not supposed to bring that up while I'm singing. actually, I have a word of warning for the audience. Warren has informed me, let me get a mic ready and warm up the singing voice. So that's because we have no callers at 877-753-3341. So here we go again. It is getting to that season, and I understand that Warren has a version of Blue Christmas by Elvis that is just to die at. Oh, yeah. Get down there in that nice low register. I better not do that because Sisygus and all those people will be turning all this stuff into WAV files so quickly that it's... In fact, make sure... can you put my computer up? If you can put my computer up, I think I still have here. Let me do there goes nothing. I think this is gonna work. This was some of you will recognize by Monday. Okay, we did the program on Saturday. By Monday, someone played this sound. Mammoth wears sunglasses. Then you must reply. It is the banana that cries in the night. Are they Oakleys? If they say, what is the light that shines really, really bright? Say, it is the light that once grew hair. If they reply, what is the Coogee? You must say, Pat Robertson knits alpaca sweaters. That was from last week. And by Monday, man, in the channel, and that sound is called JRW Goes Gnostic.wave. because now, in his defense, and I suppose we probably should probably should say this. E. Nielsen, one of the only people other than Skyman who has used the same nick the entire time I've known him in channel, which I think says something about a person's personality. But anyways, E. Nielsen, in his own defense, posted a section from the Gospel of Thomas that's very much like. I mean, it is. That's what he was playing off of. But still, I still find the entire thing. I even have a little pop-up. I just played it in the channel that has the whole thing. And it's just... oh, I tell you, we have some we have some fun on the program. I do have want to finish up the comments I had on that. And we do have a caller from California. And does he have a little bit of an accent there, Ailman, possibly? Just a little bit, maybe comes from someplace other than Louisiana, possibly? Maybe, hey, whatever, hey. Does he chase snakes in the Australian outback, maybe? Who knows? Anyways, I was commenting on the Salvation by Grace Alone article. Take a look at it, because as I... Well, let me just read a section of this. Under the Apostle Paul, now you'd think, given Romans and Galatians and things like that, this is where the most, you know, if we're going to defend the LDS view of salvation and things like that, this is where it's going to be. Listen to what we have here. This is the level we have. The Apostle Paul, the confusion over grace results principally from the writings of the Apostle Paul. But if Paul really taught that grace alone was sufficient for salvation, we must consider a number of questions. Now, here are the questions. Why did Paul write so often to Christian congregations admonishing them to abandon their sinful ways? That's a question that a serious LDS scholar asks of the viewpoint that we're talking about here. Why did Paul have to tell believing Christians that those who committed various sins could not be saved in the kingdom of God? Why did Paul teach Christ the Savior of all men, especially of those that believe? Why did Paul teach that godly sorrow worketh repentance to salvation? Why did Paul tell the Philippians to work out your own salvation with fear and trembling? This is actually, it's right there. And, I mean, anyone who's a serious reader of Scripture and theology, you're sitting here going, wait a minute, those are the questions I get from my junior high students in Sunday school at times. And I'm not, you know, go, oh, that was me. No, this is the level of interaction that is currently still at the top end of the LDS Church. I mean, that is how very different from other groups that you're dealing with. Well, actually, who does have a meaningful interaction? I mean, I guess the Roman Catholics are about the closest you can get to trying to be meaningful, and the more meaningful they become, the less Catholic they are. Fascinating stuff. But anyways, I just comment on that because I found it amazing that that would be the kind of level that we would have coming from things like that. You can take the computer down if you want to or whatever. I'm not sure if I'm sort of hearing something in the background. I'm not sure if it's because my door is open or just exactly what it is. But anyhow, all righty, we've got phone calls, and we also have a question from the room. So let me handle the question from the room fairly quickly. If that's not sufficient, then we will, go from there. I was asked from the channel, 1 Peter 3, 20-21, of course, passage that comes up a lot in discussing baptismal regeneration. Actually, back up a little bit because you're in the middle of a sentence there, starting verse 18. For Christ also died for sins once for all, the just for the unjust, so he might bring us to God, having been put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the Spirit, in which also he went and made proclamation to the spirits now in prison, who once were disobedient when the patience of God kept waiting the days of Noah during the construction of the ark, in which a few, that is, eight persons, were brought safely through the water. Corresponding to that, baptism now saves you, not the removal of dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who is at the right hand of God, having gone to heaven after angels and authorities and powers had been subjected to him. Now, not addressing the use of this passage by Mormons to attempt to establish a spirit prison, I do address that in Letters to a Mormon Elder. Oh, and by the way, if you have never obtained Letters to a Mormon Elder or Is the Mormon My Brother, you need to order them. There are some of you who have put that off and put that off and put that off. Why do I say that? Because they're going out of print. Bethany House has chosen to not reprint them, and so there is a very limited number available. And we are, of course, purchasing all of them and making them available through the ministry, but they will not last long. And after that, that's going to be it. Now, what we are going to do, Lord willing, is make them available in e-text. I do not believe that this information should be unavailable. I am well aware of the fact that I just do not write sensationalistic enough books. If I came up with some fancy title like The Godmakers or something, it would go through 16 million printings. But I eschew that kind of thing, and so we're going to put them into probably Adobe Acrobat format, PDF files, and make them available through the ministry in the form of e-books once we've sold out of the hard copies. So the information will still be there. But I know a lot of folks. I've got good friends. In fact, I have good British friends who have a number of my books, but they do not have my books on Mormonism because they live back east and Mormonism is real big there, and they just haven't taken the time to do that. And so if you're going to want to have those books available, The Prayer of Jabez for Mormon Evangelism, that's quite true, Julie. All I'd have to do is re-title it, and I'm sure it would sell just wonderfully. Of course, I would have to cut out 98% of the sound theology and package it in a nice little teeny tiny little format that you can read in an hour, because that seems to be what sells these days, millions and millions and millions and millions of copies of them. Anyways, I just wanted to mention that in passing that, for example, I do address this passage and the concept of a spirit prison there within the, I think that was within Letters to a Mormon Elder. So get those while they are still available. Maybe Crown will pick it up again. Crown doesn't exist. Crown would have to be resurrected to pick it up again. The question is focused upon verse 21. Corresponding to that, baptism now saves you, not the removal of dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And the question is not actually coming from the Church of Christ perspective. It's not coming from the get them dunked and therefore you are, you know, you're there type thing. The question, if I understand it correctly, is coming from a discussion, let me look it up here, was prompted by various sundry people in the channel reading the book Reformed is Not Enough, Recovering the Objectivity of the Covenant by Douglas Wilson. And chapter 11 is called Baptism Now Saves. And there is a... If you just took this section out, and is the Mormon my monkey? I need to put Amphibo on ignore while I'm doing this program because it'll help me keep my mind on important things. But if you just took this section out and handed it to somebody and didn't give them a background, it would definitely confuse them. Here on one page, Acts 2:38, Acts 22:16, Titus 3:5, so on. Mark 16:16, and most of you who are accustomed to dealing with various and sundry perspectives out there are immediately going, wow! And in fact, Wilson writes, all this seems to be pretty plain. What are we to do with this? Are we Roman Catholics yet? For the historically astute, the answer is, of course not. But it has to be confessed that the biblical response to these things and the historic reform formulation of them looks Roman Catholic to many modern evangelicals. But this is because they are heirs of the radical Anabaptist Reformation and not of the magisterial Reformation. We have gotten to such a low point in our awareness of our heritage that a man can be thought of to be quoting Roman Catholic formulae when he is actually quoting that old papist John Knox. The question is based upon the assertion, and let me get the exact quotation here. It was actually picking on Karl Barth at one point. Here it is. It's sort of around page 107. This is somewhat relevant to it. When we do this, we are spared the indignity of turning the scriptural language on its head. Peter Lighthart chides Karl Barth for this. For Barth, when the writer says bodies washed pure water, he means that what are not really bodies are not really washed by what is not really water. And then it goes on to say there is an apostolic succession in the church, but it is not a succession delivered through ordination. Rather, it is a succession of baptisms which have fulfilled the Old Testament type of priestly ordination, etc., etc. So, as I understand the origination of the question, what do you understand verse 21 to be saying? Corresponding to that, baptism now saves you, not the removal of dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Well, the first thing that I would point out, at least in response to the use of this passage by someone who would be saying, look, baptism saves you by putting you in the new covenant and putting you under certain obligations. I don't think that that has anything to do whatsoever with the issue at hand, because notice this is through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. This is true salvation. This is the result of the work of Christ, and the position that is being promoted by certain individuals is that you can be in the new covenant, but you're not one of the elect, and therefore you can be lost. And it is that connection, I think the intimate connection, between the work of Christ, the blood of Christ, the nature of the covenant, the resurrection, the Spirit of God applying the work of Christ to all those who are in the new covenant, etc., etc., that is really at issue here. And that's not what Peter's talking about. Peter's talking about true salvation. And not only that, he obviously is not talking about infant baptism. If he's talking about anything, then he's clearly, when you're talking about this baptism that saves you, not the removal of dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience, that is on the part of the person baptized. And I don't see, I would actually point to this passage and say, excuse me, but how do you fit any kind of paedobaptism into this? Whether, you know, whatever kind, you want to, you know, Reformed, Lutheran, whatever, how do you fit any of that into there? Because there is clearly an element here of an appeal to God for a good conscience. And I know that, well, it's on the part of the parents. That's eisegesis. That is purely eisegetical, as far as that goes. I just cannot see how that can be made to work. So I think the salvation's true salvation, that Peter's point is that those who are baptized have made this appeal. That is their what brings their salvation, and it is through the resurrection of Jesus Christ alone and not through anything that they can do for themselves. So I wish I could have found the exact reference in the book there, just looking through it. It's difficult to do while trying to talk and all the rest of that kind of stuff. As I watch the little children in the channel play with my scripts and kick themselves out of channel, it's very cute. Let's take some of our phone calls. Let me scroll back here, and I think our first phone caller was Paul in California. Is that correct? Hey, Paul. Hi. In California. How are you, sir?
Very good. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
I just wanted to ask a question about Romans 11:29, about God's gifts and his call are irrevocable, and what the gifts and the call, what they pertain to.
Well, in the context, verse 28, from the standpoint of the gospel, they are enemies for your sake, but from the standpoint of God's choice, they are beloved for the sake of the fathers. The Romans 11 is talking about the fact that just because Paul has now demonstrated through Romans 8, 9, and 10 that the gospel has gone out into all the world, and that in fact it is his purpose to create in the church this wonderful union of Jew and Gentile in the church, and that the Gentiles, as Acts 13, Paul says, once the Jews begin to resist the proclamation, he says, we had to declare it to you first, but now we turn to the Gentiles, and they rejoice, and as many as were appointed to eternal life believed, Acts 13:48. And so that great union of Jew and Gentile has been created, but Paul is then correcting an attitude that sadly I think many people did develop, grossly so during the medieval period, of basically anti-Semitism. There was a, you know, he says, look, don't boast against those branches that have been cut off so you might be grafted in. It's very obvious, sadly, that the Roman Catholic individuals of the Inquisition, for example, or of the Crusades, did not understand that, and did not understand that attitude, and the sovereignty of God in doing things the way that he did so. So when he says they're enemies for your sake, he's admitting, look, right now the Jews stand against the gospel. Sadly, that happens today too. I know of a ministry in Israel right now, Baruch Meoz, and the only Reformed Baptist Church in Israel. And everything they do, they have enemies who are enemies on a theological basis, and a theological basis only. These people hate the gospel. They've gotten members of their church fired from their jobs. They constantly file frivolous lawsuits. I mean, it is just constant religious persecution. During this time, they are enemies for your sake, but Paul reminds us, but from the standpoint of God's choice, they are beloved for the sake of the fathers, for the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. And so there is this statement concerning the fact that God's not done yet. And if you can ask me what he's going to do in the future, I don't know. I really don't. I've read so many different things, and the problem is it gets into eschatology, and at that point I just go tilt, and you know, that's the end of that. So I did hear I just heard yesterday, and this is the first time I've mentioned this to anyone, even the people on the other side of the wall here are not aware of what I'm about to tell you. So you are on the inside right now, okay? You ready for this?
Yeah.
There's a brand new book coming out from Calvary Press. Calvary Press did Dangerous Airwaves and The Potter's Freedom.
Uh-huh.
There's a brand new book coming out from Calvary Press called Eschatology Made Easy. All right. I am excited. I said, good. Send me a review copy so I can figure out what in the world it is I believe. That'll be wonderful. It's actually by an author that is very, very good, and unfortunately my brain isn't working very well today, and I can't remember who it was, but he's a good author, so it should be really good.
Okay.
So anyways, we'll get us into that. So I think that in that context, now I've heard verse 29 used in a million different ways.
Yeah.
Most of which had absolutely positively nothing to do with what Paul was talking about there. But in that context, that's the specific application. Now, can you expand it out from there? Yes, but you always have to be careful with expansion.
Yeah.
All righty, sir?
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. God bless.
Okay.
Bye-bye. 877-753-3341. Idiot's Guide to Eschatology. No, it is not the Idiot's Guide to Eschatology. That would be a good thing to write, however. It would probably sell well, as long as you put a recommendation by Jabez on the front. Do you know how many people would think that Jabez really did recommend that book if you put one on the front? Do you know how many people would be so clueless as to what in the world's going on in the world that they'd actually, hey, look, Jabez says it's a good book. I should buy that book. Isn't? No, unbelievable. Anyway, 877-753-3341. Let me see here. Newark, is that like Newark, New Jersey? Are there Christians in New Jersey? Oh, we had a New Jersey caller before, didn't we? Yeah, okay. Let's go ahead and talk with Tim in Newark. Are you still there, Tim?
Yeah, this is Tim in Newark, California.
Oh, of course.
Your long-lost buddy.
Yeah, of course. Well, yeah, I couldn't figure that we'd have anybody from New Jersey. talk about... anyways, I'm sorry, all of you who are in New Jersey. I just had a tough time there the last time I was there, okay? I got to, like, visit the entire state just because I was trying to get off the Garden State Parkway. So it's just, you know, I'm still recovering from it, and I have nightmares about it. So anyways, Tim in the other Newark on the other side, in another state where there's almost no Christians either, you have a question about Fred Phelps? How could you have a question about Fred Phelps?
Well, his crew came over here recently, and I kind of engaged with them.
That didn't last long.
Oh, no. What was good about it, though, why that circus gathered all the people, I was preaching to all the kids and the news people and the police officers, so it worked out kind of good in a sense. But because they stirred up, you know, a lot of people, because they had this Laramie Project, you know, that's a play that's going on about Messy Shepherd. And they came to boycott it here in my city. And then a couple of the pastors that spoke up about it, you know, they went to their churches to protest first. You know, they have their calendar. We're going to be here at this time and then there at that time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I went over there with Brother G in the camera and tried to engage with them to reason. Of course, I knew they were unreasonable. Rich told me that you had an encounter with them, and I was kind of curious, you know, what's your perspective on them. You know, I tried to challenge them about the Matthew Shepard. Fred wasn't there himself, but I asked the guy, I said, you know, you said Matthew Shepard in hell for 4 years. I go, the man lied dying for a couple hours out there in the desert or wherever, and how do you know he didn't cry out in the last minutes of his breath? And he goes, well, why don't you get out here with the sign that says that? You know, and I said, well, you don't know for a fact. I go, I didn't even see anything about Jesus here. I go, you know, so basically what it came down to, he says, this is the message. And I said, what, Matthew Shepard's in hell? I said, yeah, to preach the gospel, Jesus Christ and him crucified. And, you know, one of the ladies came up to me and she, you know, got me all riled up. And I ended up, you know, yelling a little bit just to try to yell over her voice. And they ended up telling me I'm a heretic. I'm not, because I said, you guys are reformed in theology, right? And they ended up calling me after a few minutes an Arminian heretic. I'm going to hell, and I'm a more fag and abler than the fags themselves. And I was just wondering what your opinion and what your encounter was like.
Well, yeah, we talked about it briefly. When was it? I don't know. This was about, I guess it was a full year ago now when they showed up in Salt Lake City, and Fred Phelps was with them. And it was October last year, because I had debated Barry Lynn in May, And Barry Lynn had asked me about Fred Phelps, and at that time I had said, well, look, I can't comment on the man because I've never met him, I've never talked to him, I've heard him on the radio, and what he says is weird and strange, but the things you're telling me I've not seen. And I hadn't looked into him. And so we're staying there watching these folks, and they have these disgusting signs, and, yeah, they had the Matthew Shepard, of course, that time 3 years in hell, but... they were screaming and yelling about America being a, you know, satanic nation, and they're holding a flag upside down, and they were just really making a, you know, really making the Mormons want to listen to what they have to say, as if this was relevant. And of course, they were there at the conference because they had been told that Mel White and his group were going to be there. Well, Mel White and his group didn't show up. There were about two or three homosexual Mormons with a gay pride flag standing someplace else, and it was just a spectacle. But anyways, I walked up to Phelps, introduced myself, told him that I had debated Barry Lynn, that I was writing a book for Bethany House on the subject, Elder Reformed Baptist Church, etc., etc. He's like, oh, you know, and he's you know, sort of listening. And then when I All I said was, after introducing myself, I said, so as you can see, you know, I have taken a very public, firm stance against homosexuality, the fact that it is not consistent with biblical Christianity. However, sir, we are told in the scriptures to speak the truth in love. That's as far as I got. As soon as I said, we are to speak the truth in love, he goes, you're a God hater and a Bible hater. And as soon as he did that, all his people descended on me and got between me and him. It was obviously a signal. It was meant to indicate I have someone here who opposes me. And immediately these people come zooming down in between me and him and start yelling and screaming and acting like complete and total loons. And that was all I was able to say to the man. And as I watched, they had their young people there holding these signs and yelling these things that they are hate mongers. They don't have the foggiest idea what the Spirit of God is or what the truth of God is. They are very clearly individuals who are motivated solely by hatred and not by anything else. And they should be exposed for what they are. And anyone who is a believer should distance themselves as much as possible from this kind of thing, because it brings great rebuke upon the gospel of Christ, because they do not, even when they say true words, you can say true words in a context that makes them a lie. And that's exactly what these people do. So thankfully they haven't shown up again. And I think most people are well aware of the fact that they do not represent true biblical Christianity in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, amen. I agree with you there. I have another question in kind of the same regard.
Okay, well, hold on just a second. We'll hold you through the break, and we'll be right back on The Dividing Line. Call in at 877-753-3341.
A godly man, such a rarity today. So many stars, strong and true, quickly fall away.
Welcome back to Dividing Line. My name is James White. We are taking your phone calls today. And I have been reminded about some things I haven't mentioned. For those of you who have been wondering, we do have the MP3s of the Open Theism and Inclusivism. Is Inclusivism up? Are they both up? Both Open Theism and Inclusivism? I know the Open Theism, not yet. Uh-huh. Okay, so just the Open Theism debate is up, the Inclusivism debate, I'm sure, is not far behind, because someone's working on the audience questions. It was easier for the other debate because the audience questions were read from the podium, so we had them right on the tape, but not all the audience questions came through with sufficient clarity to hear on the on the Inclusivism debate. So those will be available, and then shortly after that, hopefully the videos as well. And so those are available on the site. And don't forget, we're coming up on barely a year out. And you go, a year? It's forever. No, it's not forever. Coming up on a year out from the cruise in the Eastern Caribbean. We're going to be talking about Islam and the issues of defending the faith in regards to Islamic apologetics on the Alpha and Omega Ministries cruise on the Zaandam. And that's going to be a really good time together. I'm looking forward to it. I know for me, I don't measure time by time anymore. I measure it by projects, primarily on the basis of books and debates and trips. That's how I look at time now. And so that seems like forever away for me because I know what I have to do between now and then. But it's not, and you need to get on our website, and we do have the information on the website, right? I know we do. Yep, okay. Hit our website, click on the thing, get hold of Michael Fallon, and let him know of your interest. The sooner you do that, the better for everyone concerned. And we'll be getting together and doing that to next December of next year, first week around that time of December of next year, down in the Caribbean. So those of you especially up in the colder climes will enjoy getting an opportunity to sort of extend the warmer portion of the year just a little bit before you get into those wonderful months of January, February, March, where you're always, you know, digging out from the snow, things like that. So keep those things in mind. Let's go back to our phone callers, and let's talk next with Keith right here in beautiful 77-degree Phoenix, No. Okay, I won't go with what's actually on the screen right now. We still have Tim. Oh, all right. Well, I thought we had. It sounded really weird when we went into break. It was just like everything died. I thought maybe we hung up on the poor guy.
So am I on with you still, James?
You're there.
Am I that boring?
Have you ever seen Shrek?
No.
You never saw the movie Shrek? Oh, man.
I'm just getting into where I could sit down long enough to go to a movie.
Well, but I mean like on DVD or something like that. There's this one point where Donkey is talking to Shrek and he's talking about uncomfortable pauses, and there's an uncomfortable pause. But since you didn't see it, it's really not going to make a difference. Okay. So
okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was going to mention something about, I guess, the Bible believers, King James only guys that are thrashed you at the conference, I understand.
Oh, they're a lovely group.
You know, because I knew a few of them around here. One I've been trying to work with who's came a long ways, and what I was wondering is when are you going to have that article and maybe some AVI files from the video you took from these guys, because I need some good evidences of some of their behavior towards you.
Well,
would be really good for me in my apologetic work over here.
Yeah, well, I'm not the one to talk to about that. The fellow with the on the list, which means it's not going to happen, at least not during our lifetimes anyways. You got to talk to that other guy, the guy who answers the phones. He's the one with the that kind of stuff. In fact, he even started to write an article we were going to put on the webpage, but you know, he got an air compressor. That's the problem. And now he's got all these pneumatic tools, and he just loves the that sound is just really exciting to him, and it's a sad thing to see, but you know, so that's what he wants to do all the time. So ask him about it, because I've sort of moved on. I mean, I...
All right, I'll give him a ring and maybe next week or so. But so these people, you know, I can't understand some of the ways they go about, you know, their so-called evangelism is kind of backfires, similar to Phelps's.
No, they don't. You got to understand, these folks... You cannot reason with these individuals. We've tried to. If you're asking for consistency, if you're asking for them to be pondering biblical truths or looking for, you know, looking at things from another perspective. They don't do that. They revel in being as simple-minded as possible and consider their ignorance of truth to be a godly attribute. So, you know, people, oh, you're being rough. Just watch them for a while. Just stand back and watch these people for a while. It is absolutely, positively amazing. It truly is.
One quick question before I let you go here, or you let me go. Like when Phelps, you know, they're calling me names, this and that. What can we show in Scripture that that's not right? And also I've seen the Bible believers, like at a wine festival, they calling people drunkards. They call girls that are wearing loose clothing whores and stuff. I mean, where was a Christian?
First of all, they're not going to listen to you anyways. No passage of Scripture has any warrant for them because they don't really believe the Bible. They believe their traditions. They may use Bible verses, but they've never. You could tell these individuals. I mean, when I tried to get them, for example, to deal with Hebrews 13:17,
right.
Those who have the rulership over you, their response to that was, "My elder is Jesus," and it's like, well, this is in the plural. But my elder is Jesus. I mean, that's the kind of mentality you're dealing with. You can quote all the verses about speaking the truth in love and how your speech is to be seasoned with grace and all the rest of that stuff. It's irrelevant to them. They could totally, completely care less. There is no reasoning with these people. They are not functioning on a rational basis. So there's just no reason to even try, to be perfectly honest with you. I've given up on it anyways. Alrighty, thanks
all
a lot, man.
James, I appreciate your input on that.
All right, God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless you.
All right, now we go to Keith here in 77 degree beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. And, oh, that was interesting. Yep, still 77 degrees. Humidity 14%, folks. Dew point 25 degrees. This is why people move here. Throughout the entire winter. It's just like, it's gorgeous. Yes, sir. Keith, how can I help you, sir?
Well, I was having a discussion with a friend of mine today who's also a believer, and he was in specific relationship to a Jewish person that he knows, and he was talking about their relationship with God and how godly this person is.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of my contention that a non-Christian person doesn't have a relationship with God, or at least not a proper one.
Mm-hmm.
And also that realistically, a non-Christian person can't really be godly.
Well, yeah. Two things. Relationship to God, the greatest impediment to the relationship with God is the issue of sin. And the only way of dealing with that issue, of course, a person being spiritually dead isn't going to have much of a relationship with God in the first place, but
right.
Is through the work of Jesus Christ. So our society finds the assertion that the only true way of having a relationship with Christ, with God, is through Christ, to be extremely offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to realize many people in evangelical churches are so infected with a postmodern mindset that when they hear that stated, they automatically recoil from it.
Right.
Because of how deeply we are influenced by the society around us. But you are certainly correct that as far as having a relationship, a union with God, a person who rejects the atoning work of Jesus Christ, makes God a liar, they remain in their sins, the wrath of God abides. There is a relationship, but it is the relationship of the wrathful judge and the sinner who abides underneath that wrath. That's the first thing. As far as this person being godly, that obviously depends on how you define godly. If you define godly only in a moralistic sense, then there are godly Muslims, and there are godly Hindus, and there are godly Buddhists in the sense of, by common grace, doing those things that the law written upon our hearts demands that we do. I mean, an atheist can come over and help you with your, you know, change your tire. That doesn't give them eternal life. I mean, that's just doing the minimum, let alone fulfilling the actual law. Godliness goes far beyond mere morality. And embraces one's motivations and everything else. And of course, if you're not doing these things for the glory of Christ, then how could that be a truly godly action?
Okay.
So that's how I'd respond to such a person. And, you know, and again, it sort of tests where they're coming from as far as do they have a biblical worldview or do they have a humanistic worldview? And there's a lot of people that call themselves Christians who have a primarily humanistic worldview.
Right.
It's sad but true. All righty?
Sounds good. Thanks for your help.
Thank you, sir. Mm, enjoy bye. The beautiful day.
Oh, I will.
All right. 877-753-3341. And we go to now. I would like to talk to Sisygus, but there's some guy named Brock on the line, so I guess I'll talk to Brock first. So, Brock, not knowing who you are, what's your question? I'll give you a quick answer.
Hey, good afternoon, James. Privileged to be on your show, although...
Well, you sound a lot like him, though. Are you related?
Maybe okay. A little bit. But, you know, you give such a bad time to we folks here in California. You know, it's either our clocks or our weather or...
Or your fires, your earthquakes, your race riots, your state governments, your electrical supply, Hollywood. Do I need to go on?
No, but, you know, at least we have Messiah sing-alongs out here.
Oh!
Okay,
all right, okay. Just, I cannot believe you did that.
Okay.
Oh, there you are. Okay, just a second. Hold on just a moment here. And, okay. All righty. There you go. All right, now.
I'm not watching channels, so if you're doing something to me there, I'll find out.
Oh, you'll find out when you get done, yes.
But, you know, that reminds me, if anyone out there knows of a good Messiah sing-along in Phoenix.
Yes, this
sure
is true.
It's a lot of
That's
snow.
So kind of you after I just kicked you to do that. It's so nice. But,
I've tried
no,
to for brotherly love.
It is true. They used to have them. I do remember them because I remember going, wow, you know, that would really be cool. But at the time... This was back, you know, in the 80s. The church I was going to, big, huge, massive church, I think for about like 3 years running did, not obviously all the Messiah, but did major portions of the Messiah. So it was sort of like I got all of it that I wanted. And then as soon as I didn't have access to that, it's like, poof, the sing-alongs, oh, well.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
And you are doing one is what you'd like to announce to an entire national audience, right?
Pardon?
And you are doing one, right?
Yes.
Would you like to give us some examples?
No. I did enough singing last night that I think I'm a little bit hoarse today, and I don't have a cough drop button like you do. Sitting
well, here, let me play a little. Okay, here. This is And the Glory of the Lord. You ready? I'm sorry. Okay, it's not what you were calling about. Was it?
No, actually, I was calling about something else. It's kind of an open-ended question, but I figured...
Oh, Warren wants to sing with you. I just got a notification that Warren would like to sing with you.
All right. Yeah, that would be great. That would be Elvis.
If you walked in with Warren at a sing-along, you'd be the first two people ever ushered out of a Messiah sing-along. Excuse me, but we really don't have room for you. Sorry. Okay, your question is, I'm sorry.
So my question is regarding interpretation of Old Testament writers by New Testament authors. Ew, I'm getting a horrible squawk there. I don't know.
I could just barely hear it, but you sound okay.
Okay, so, you know, for example, I noticed when I was flipping through Dangerous Airwaves, you touched on the Sarah Hagar interpretation in Galatians, and, you know, there's some... allegorical treatment there,
right,
and then there's also the prophecy, he shall be called a Nazarene,
mm-hmm,
which,
mm-hmm.
you know, possibly comes from Nesser and the Isaiah prophecy, but maybe it's not as clear as we would like to see. So, you know, how do we understand from New Testament writers' hermeneutic the way in which we're supposed to do hermeneutics? Is there an extension we can draw from some of that? Or do
well,
we have to look and say, well, that's just their privilege under inspiration?
Well, I think there's one major difference is that they're not dealing primarily with didactic literature that can be interpreted in the same way. They are dealing with signs and figures and prophecies that necessarily utilize symbolism and things like that. And so that introduces, I mean, we actually do use the same kind of interpretive method when dealing with New Testament apocalyptic literature. At least we should. I mean, of course, that's not how to sell millions and millions and millions of copies of books, but...
yeah, they're all helicopters.
yeah, you know, but that's how we're supposed to do it anyway. So we do recognize that in dealing with the same kind of literature in the New Testament, which is not as prevalent, of course, but that we do utilize similar methodologies of interpretation. So there's one difference there. There is, of course, the fact that Luke records for us the Lord instructing the disciples on the witness of the Old Testament, and so we are given by the Lord himself a paradigm that we have to take seriously, and that is that it's God's intention to direct us to himself in what he has given to his church. Now, there's a tremendous amount, actually, of controversy amongst, and we're not talking about Harold Camping followers either. There's a tremendous amount of controversy even amongst Reformed folks as to exactly where you draw the line there. There are those who, for example, there are those who would say that what we do at our church, where when we read the Old Testament, we make application. We would say, for example, if you look at what, you know, how David responds to certain situations, that we can apply that to our lives, that we can learn lessons about being godly men and women from how David acts. There are people who say that's absolutely completely out the window. You should never do that, that in reality, everything needs to be brought to Christ. Everything is a picture of Christ. Everything somehow has to be made Christocentrically related and not in any way draw a moral story out of any of that stuff. So there, you know, there's folks that just really come down hard on that. And I remember a church I ministered in, what, about 18 to 24 months ago now. Actually, it's 2 years ago, this December, that was tearing the church up. Were people that got into this and said, you cannot preach the Old Testament without preaching Christ in every single context, so on and so forth. So there's actually a lot of discussion. I tend more toward looking at how Gleason, Archer, and others have answered issues in regards to was Matthew taking Hosea out of context or things like that. I think that there's reasons for saying no, did not, and I'm sure you've looked at his work. What's it called? The old... what's the name of that book? Maybe you haven't. Don't you hate it when someone says, well, I'm sure you've looked at this before, and you're going, I have the foggiest idea what this guy's talking about. Old Testament, unfortunately, it's behind a bookshelf, so I cannot see it. I know exactly where it is on my bookshelf, but it's by Gleason Archer. It's the use of the New Testament, use of the Old Testament and the New, that you might find very useful in working through some of those particular passages. But I think that at least we can make a case that it was not what is called Pesher interpretation. And that is that if you've studied Midrash or any of the Jewish writings, you know that they would latch on to basically anything. It's sort of, you know, a Jewish Harold Campingism. And it just basically says, look, the text is just your playground. You know, find similarities in words, find similarities in the forms of letters, whatever it might be, and go from there. I don't believe that that's what Paul was engaging in. There are liberal scholars who would argue that, however. They would say it most definitely is.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Well, and on an unrelated point, I'd love to hear you do a show sometime on New Perspectivism, that just spend the whole time on that, because I know that's really up and rising, and I know there are a lot of people who are getting pulled into it now. And
yeah, actually, I was taught that was somewhat related to the previous question on First Peter, but yeah, it is now. You know, a lot of people are asking me, why didn't you address that in your book? Because that's what the subject is about. Well, when I encountered it in seminary. And it was still very much in the liberal realm of things. It wasn't presented as something. I mean, there was lots of things that were presented to me when I was in at Fuller Seminary that you know, were way out in the ozone layer someplace, and I just sort of cataloged that along with it. And it was only during the writing of my book that it really started getting more and more mainline. People like John Armstrong and others pushing NT Wright stuff, and in fact. It's funny you mentioned that. Let me dig down here. That's all my tungsten tea stuff. Sorry, Pete. Boy, look at that stuff that came with that. That's really cool. I'm holding in my hands Reformation Revival Journal for Volume 11, Number 1, Winter 2002. So this is current. They mentioned my book, but criticized it as not dealing with the new scholarship. And what concerned me was on pages... why don't they put a page in this stuff? Here we go. 117 and following, a Reformation and Revival Journal interview with N.T. Wright. And it is very, very positive. It is really meant to, in essence, promote Wright's perspective. And he says a lot of things in here that are just should very much concern you. He calls it the fresh perspective and things like that. One of the things that just blew me away was his discussion of 2 Corinthians chapter 5. The imputation of Christ's righteousness is one of the big sticking points for sure. I think I know exactly what the doctrine is about, and I believe you don't lose anything by the route I propose. That always worries me when someone talks like that. The force of what people have believed when they have used the idea of imputation is completely retained in what I have tried to do. In other words, he rejects imputation, but seemingly feels you can still get to the same point by another route, which makes me go, excuse me. Why? Because in Christ we have all the treasures, not only of wisdom and knowledge, but in whom we have the entire package, meaning sanctification and wisdom as well as righteousness. So Paul's theology of being in Christ gives you all of that, but the fact that it gives you more than that does rock you back on your heels a bit and prompt you to ask, have we made too much of this one thing called righteousness? The key text, which is 2 Corinthians 5:21, has been read for generations, ever since Luther at least, as an isolated, detached statement of wondrous exchange. When we do this, we forget that the entire passage from the three chapters led up to it and the chapter and a half that follow are about apostleship. These are all about the strange way in which the suffering of the apostles somehow is transmuted into the revelation of God's glory. In the middle of this, the statement occurs that God made him to be sin who knew no sin, so in him we might become the righteousness of God. After this, I started to read Dikaiosune Theou, the righteousness of God, as covenantal faithfulness in Romans. I then suddenly thought, wait a minute, what about 2 Corinthians 5:21? And then I realized that the whole thing here is 2 Corinthians 3, the new covenant. God has made us ministers of the new covenant. We are embodying the covenant faithfulness of God. I can see how frustrating it is for a preacher who has preached his favorite sermon all these years on the imputation of Christ's righteousness from 2 Corinthians 5:21 to hear that this is not the right way to understand it, but I actually think that there's an even better sermon waiting to be preached. You can always preach one in 1 Corinthians 1:30 as long as you do wisdom, sanctification, redemption, all three. So in essence, it seems to me he's saying what that passage is about is that we as apostles are demonstrations of God's covenant faithfulness. Now that is not what Paul's talking about, but that's what you're left with is this new perspectivism. So yeah, we're going to have to deal with it much more in the future, and it's something else. And you hear that sound in the background? Thank you very much, sir, and let Sisygus know that he's allowed back in channel now. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening today, folks. This is The Dividing Line. We'll be back again, not next week. Well, maybe. I don't know what we're going to do because I'm in St. Louis. But we'll talk to you all sometime this week. God bless.
The Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-0318 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's aomin.org, where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracts. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. for The Dividing Line.